by all the great barbecue products and supplies at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply and Pro Shop. I know you've got questions, and we've got answers. So pick up the phone, 423-267-1023, and let's talk some barbecue.
Hey, that's right. Hey, welcome to the weekend, and welcome to the barbecue show, the Owl's Nest Barbecue Show, live right here on Talk Radio 102.3. Simulcast on the Owl's Nest Barbecue Facebook page. Hey, our number is 423-267-1023. 423-267-1023. Get off your lazy butt and give us a call, and we'll talk barbecue tonight. We've got a jam-packed show for you tonight. Broadcast partner, as always, is Backyard Smokers Barbecue. And we are now associated with, proudly, the Dead Broke Barbecue Network on YouTube. Jeff Rice and all his buddies, the creator of Dead Broke Barbecue. Check it out on YouTube. You'll be glad you did. Let's see, who else? Ryan is here. Joe's here. Jeff is here. Steve Ray is here. 267-1023. Okay, I covered all the bases. What a day. What a day, Jeff. Jeff and I just, we came up to do the show here at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Live Studios. We have got a 140-pound hog on our Carolina pig cooker right now. And, Jeff, it's amazing.
That is a beautiful-looking animal.
And, well, it's with Elvis now, as they say, but it's getting cooked.
She's looking pretty.
It's looking good. We checked it right before we came up. And the Carolina pig cooker is doing just a fantastic job. So you can go to the Owl's Nest Barbecue Facebook page. There's a video of us prepping it. If you want to do that, and just, you know, check it out. Hey, Steve, what's new in barbecue segment brought to you tonight by the new Urban Slicer White and Red Pizza Mojo Seasoning, a sublime seasoning. I've always wondered what that word was, what it meant, sublime. A new product available at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply in Ooltewah, the Urban Slicer White and Red Pizza Mojo Seasoning, a sublime seasoning. Of course, the biggest thing going on in our barbecue lives right now is the big Hoptown Beer Bar anniversary going on tomorrow. It starts at noon, featuring a whole hog pig roast by none other than us, the Owl's Nest Barbecue team. Ryan Hargrove, the owner of the Hoptown Beer Bar, was nice enough to invite us over, and we are going to not let him down. Our special guest pitmaster tomorrow is Jeff Eversall from Walmart, and he will be assisted by his wife, Denise, and they will be assisted by the Owl's Nest Barbecue team. So we have a lot of people cooking this hog just for you so it doesn't get screwed up. Now, this is what you're going to get tomorrow, because you can come out at noon and you can buy a plate. This is how we take care of you. Each plate is going to be $15, and this is what you're going to get. You're going to get a big pulled pork sandwich. You're going to get a bag of Lay's potato chips. You're going to get a side of Jennifer's famous baked beans. And you're going to get a side of Jennifer's famous mac and cheese. And you're going to get a Little Debbie brownie. And you're going to get a drink. All of that for $15. Seriously, two people could probably eat off of one box. So come on out to Hoptown Beer Bar tomorrow, and we will see you out there with our whole hog, with the whole hog cooker. Just follow your nose, as they say. Also, we are waiting on the new Royal Oak charcoal pellets. I thought they would be here by now. Did they come in? Aaron says he worked today. He said they did not come in. But they should be here any day. Now, I know a lot of people are waiting on them. This is the biggest technological breakthrough since Neil Armstrong took that first step on the moon and uttered those famous words, "Man, I hope this thing starts back up." Royal Oak real charcoal pellets. They are a thing, and they are on their way to the Owl's Nest Barbecue store. All right, got that note down. All right, we're going to announce our new guest right now, all the way from Ooltewah, one of the longest running establishments at Cambridge Square, the purveyor of the Hoptown Beer Bar himself, Aaron. That's right, Mr. Ryan Hargrove of the Hoptown Beer Bar at Cambridge Square in Ooltewah, celebrating 6 years of keeping the thirsty people in Ooltewah happy. Ryan, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very nice introduction. I like that.
Well, you deserve it. I guess, Ryan, you're the longest tenant, the longest business at Cambridge Square, probably.
So Southern Burger and Loopy's were there a short time before us,
mm-hmm.
and then we opened. And then a week later, Wind Down opened. And, of course, they're all, you know, all those businesses are still there as well. But, yeah, 6 years, man. It's been a wild, like, you know, especially.
You know, I remember when you announced that you were going to open a craft beer place. Everybody got so excited. And, you know, the momentum has built. And from day one, you go by there, especially in the spring, summer, when you've got those big garage doors open and the you know, the store just kind of flows out into the square. Just a wonderful setting. Well, tell me about before we talk about the big anniversary party, Mark. Tell me about how you designed that and what you designed that after.
Well, now looking at it these days, I wish we would have gotten a bigger location because it's a little you know, we're just a small little 1,000 square foot spot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's nice on certain days and certain nights. We kind of have like a cozy, relaxing atmosphere with a small spot. But Howard, we designed it that way just to be, you know, we didn't want a huge 4,000 or 5,000 square foot place that even if it was packed, it looked empty. You know, we like to have a smaller spot, relaxing atmosphere. You know, we like people to, you know, put their phones down, not watch TV, talk to each other about life and talk to each other about beer. And, you know, we designed it that way on purpose. And, you know, again, on a busy Friday night, Saturday afternoon, sure, we wish we were a little bit bigger, but, you know, that may be some news that we have in the future coming up shortly. So,
well, I'm going to tell everybody right now, Ryan is being very humble. That place busts at the seams on these pretty days. I've been by there, and the people sitting at that long bar inside, Ryan, then they pour out onto the little patio area that you have, and then in the main lobby there, people just standing around and you know, sampling. You know, you got those flights and you know, sampling the different craft beers you got. How do you decide which one to put in there? That's got to be a tough decision.
Well, you know, it's crazy. A lot of people ask me that. They ask if I try everything we get, and the answer to that is no. I don't really have time to. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but I don't have time to try everything that we bring in. I do a little bit of research and you know, look online just to see what styles are popular at the time, and I mean, essentially, I just look and see what sounds good to me. And, you know, there may be some things that we get that we'll never get again.
Mm-hmm.
That's not usually the case. I'll have to pat myself on the back a lot I'm very biased with this, but I think that even when my wife and I want to go out for a beer and I ask her, you know, where do we want to go? And, you know, sometimes I don't want to go to work. But we find ourselves at the best place that we think has the best selection of anywhere in Chattanooga, and I honestly feel like that's at Hoptown.
It's your play. I agree with that 100%.
I know I'm biased, but you know, and there's no, you know, I love lots of other small businesses that we have around the city, and some of them even belong to some friends of mine. But just looking at an overall selection for someone, for people that, you know, for everyone, you know, there may be some things that we have that I don't like, but I found out in the very beginning that's not what it's all about. It's about, you have to have something for everyone, because my goal is that if somebody's walking through that door, they're getting something.
Absolutely.
No matter what it is, I'm gonna get them something that day.
Hey, let's talk about the big party tomorrow. Starts at noon. Tell me what tell me what you're going to have, and then I'll tell you what we're going to have.
So what we've got, starting at actually 12:30 and going to 3:30, we've got some live music from a guy named Daniel Schmidt. I actually met him at Southside Social a couple months ago. We were just there hanging out, and the music he was playing there just was, it was awesome. And I went up to him and asked him for a card, and he was available tomorrow, so he'll be there. He ends at 3:30. There is more live music on the square at 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, and people can, you know, grab a beer from us and take it out to the square and go check out the check out that live music. I've got several beers that we've been kind of, I call it hoarding. Like I've had some kegs that I've kept for this, pretty much this special weekend. I've had some that I've kept for over a year, just knowing that this is something special. This is something I want to share with people. This is not just a beer that we'll just tap to you know, any other day. So we've got lots of good beer that we're going to have on tap, and also not just on tap, but in some cans. And I'll have to give a quick shout out to some a brewery that's here in Chattanooga, Odd Story Brewing Company, made some amazing cans for us just for our anniversary.
Oh, good!
And they're really good friends of ours.
All right, we're gonna.
We've got.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, we've got in addition to the food you're bringing, we've got some amazing. We keep them all the time. Some spent grain pretzels that we're doing tomorrow that are we always have, but we're doing a really good deal on those. And yeah, man, just a good time with a lot of good friends and good people, good vibes, and that's what we're looking forward to.
Well, we're going to be there with a pig roast going on, our whole hog. We're going to have it on the hog cooker, serving right off the hog, and we're looking forward to servicing all your customers and our customers, Ryan. And I'm going to tell you something. You just don't realize what a big pleasure and an honor it is to be teaming up with you. This is something I've always wanted to do. You know, I've always wanted to do something down at your place. And this is going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully, maybe it'll even kick off something that we can make a semi-annual thing going on.
100%. I'm very excited about just this event, and I would love to. I was talking to my wife about that. I would love to do something, you know, similar to this, you know.
Absolutely.
Not just once a year, but we could do this more often, you know. And it doesn't even have to be a whole hog. It just could be, you know, just some good barbecue.
Good old barbecue. We can do that too.
You're the master. All that good stuff.
Well, good deal. All right, man. We got to run, Ryan. Thank you so much, and we'll see you tomorrow. We'll be down there really early, and I know you will be too. And we'll hook up and talk some more tomorrow, okay? Ryan Hargrove, the purveyor of Hoptown Beer Bar in Cambridge Square. 6th anniversary party tomorrow starts at 12 noon, and we will see him down there. We're going to take our first break. Stay with us here on the Owl's Nest Barbecue Show live on Talk Radio 102.3. We'll be right back. There, Robert. Come on, Robert. Pick up that phone. Pick up that phone, Robert. He didn't hear it ring last time. Pick up that phone, Robert Moss. Pick up that phone. Pick up that phone. Pick up that phone. Call him again, Aaron.
Do you have his number?
Yeah. It is 1. Hang on. Let's see. Crap. Mm. 1-843. Okay. 259.
Hey there, Steve.
Hey, Robert. What's up, buddy?
Not much.
Good deal. Glad you're there. Glad you're there.
Yep.
We ran over just
looking
a little
forward
bit.
To the
oh, good.
Nice weekend here.
Yes, sir. How's the weather in Charleston?
It's pretty good. It's only in the low 80s today, so not super
hot. Yeah, it's great here. We've had some nice non-humidic weather, as they say.
Yeah, we had a bunch of rain earlier, but storms came through, but then the last 2 days have been.
I'm going to get the radio station to let me do a 4-hour show with you one of these days.
Might have to bring a snack for that one.
We can do that.
Get a couple barbecue sandwiches.
We can do that. What'd you think about that picture of that pig I sent you? Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, it looked pretty awesome. Now, when did y'all do that?
Today. It's on the pit now.
Oh, it's on the pit now?
Yeah, we took a break to do the show, and we're heading right back down.
All right. Well, it looked great, man. That's a big old sucker.
Remember, I'm going to be there November. I'm going to come November 13th, so make sure put me on the alternate list.
Oh, definitely will.
You know how those superstar pig cookers are. They'll bug out on you.
For your free online.
All right, here we go. Just a second.
HIMS.com/JOY. Talk Radio 102.3.
Okay, are you a Malcolm Reed fan? Sure you are. Everybody is. And we have the entire lineup of How to Barbecue Right rubs and sauces at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply in Oldowa. Did you see Malcolm use his classic barbecue rub on that pork butt and follow it up with his AP rub? Yeah, I saw it too. And you can get them both at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply in Oldowa. Okay, we're going back to the Butcher Barbecue Hotline. And our next guest is... Thank you very much. It's hard finding good free help. All the way from the Low Country in South Carolina, we have barbecue historian Dr. Robert Moss, author of Barbecue, the History of an American Institution. I'm showing it right now on the Facebook side of the broadcast. I go nowhere without this book, Robert. It is my favorite book. You know, I told you one day, Jeff, we need to do a 4-hour show with Robert.
He could definitely fill it.
Yeah, we can talk the history of barbecue from 1777 to
today,
2021. We could do the whole. Yeah. We could run the whole gambit, Robert.
Hours, my guess, about to 1900. We may have to do 6 hours.
We can do that. I'll block it off. These guys are always looking for good ideas here at the radio station.
Marathon.
Hey, before we talk about the history of the. The 4th of July and barbecue. Let's talk about the Holy Smokes, the Low Country Barbecue Festival that is coming up on November the 13th. I know it's a little early, but this looks like it's going to be a pretty big deal, Robert.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be, and I'm proud to be a part of it, helping organize it a little bit. It's going to be here in Charleston, technically in North Charleston, just up the peninsula from downtown, in a place called The Bend, which is this gorgeous event space overlooking the Ashley River. Very few places in Charleston where you can have an outdoor event overlooking the marsh and the river. And this is going to be one of them. And it's going to be in November, which in Charleston is a great time to be here because the weather is usually very mild and pleasant. And we are inviting pitmasters from all over the country. It's really getting organized by some of the local barbecue restaurateurs here, the guys behind the Home Team Barbecue and Swig and Swine, along with Rodney Scott and John Lewis, two well-known pitmasters here, will be involved. And then we're going to be announcing the full pitmaster lineup in about, I think, another month or so, and tickets will be going on sale. But it's going to be quite an impressive lineup. I think we have people from New York, from California, from Texas, from Florida, so it's going to be a really good event. So really, really looking forward to that. And it's something we started trying to do it 2 years ago, and of course COVID put things on hold last year, so this will be the inaugural outing, but really looking forward to that, and say we'll have more details coming out later this summer.
And that is November the 13th of this year.
13th, at, yep, which at, is a Saturday.
At the Bend in North Charleston, South Carolina. It's going to be, this is, I think, Robert, it's more than just a local event. This is going to be a regional event. And, of course, Chattanooga is in the Charleston regional area. A lot of people vacation there from Chattanooga. No, they do. I mean, there are a lot of people head down there and vacation there.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. If you're heading to the beach, that's the ideal time to do it. And it'll be, all afternoon event. Probably, I don't know exactly what time we'll start. Start sometime 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, run until about sundown. But if you want to head down for a long weekend at the beach, or it's an ideal thing to do in November. And the beaches here are really nice in November. It's not so hot, but definitely not cold yet at that time of year.
I have never been to Charleston, but this is going to be my first visit because I'm coming. I'm heading down there.
You're in for a treat, and we're really looking forward to getting you down here.
Well, I can't wait. That's November the 13th. All right, let's talk a little bit about my favorite thing, barbecue history. I was listening to a podcast a few weeks ago with you and another gentleman, and it was one of the more interesting topics that I've heard about barbecue in a long time, so I just want to plagiarize that interview and use it as my own, okay? If that's okay with you. And
yep,
we're talking about the history of barbecue.
I'll have the same answer.
we'll check the tape and go back and compare. But with the 4th of July coming up, and I guess, Memorial Day has got its own barbecue vibe because it's kind of the kickoff, especially this year. It was kind of like the unofficial reopening of America. And the 4th of July this year, I think, is going to be it's going to be huge because, number one, it's on a Sunday, and everybody will take off Monday. And so we kind of get a twofer on that one. And I think everybody's going to enjoy that. But explain to everyone the history of barbecue and the 4th of July, and especially the period after the Civil War. Because, Robert, you talk about things in your book that are going on right now that have been going on in other places for decades, not just years. I'm talking decades. I'm talking like Juneteenth. We think that that's a new thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a new thing, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. And, everything old is new again. For sure. I mean, we think about barbecue in the 4th of July these days. I think a lot of people associate it with both for backyard cookouts, but that's a really big day for people to go to barbecue restaurants and get takeout and do picnics and that kind of thing. So we definitely associate barbecue with the 4th of July, but I didn't realize until I started doing the research for the book just how far back in history 4th of July barbecues go. In fact, it goes back to the very beginning almost of the country. So from very early on, after the American Revolution, decade after the American Revolution, people would celebrate with dinners, and this got bigger and bigger. They moved outdoors. And then by 1800, giant outdoor barbecues were really the sort of standard way to celebrate the 4th of July, particularly in the South. And, I found all these new newspaper accounts from the 1800s, 1810s. All these big outdoor barbecues, and by big, we mean hundreds, if not thousands of people.
Yeah.
It'd be a gathering for the entire county, coming from all around. It'd be outdoors, free to all. Of course, this is back before refrigeration, so they would bring whatever animals they were going to cook, which were usually donated by local farmers. They'd bring them to wherever the barbecues want to be, slaughter them right there, dig big pits in the ground, and cook them up. And so it was a way to get together and celebrate the 4th of July. And I think it's important to the later story that you're talking about post-Civil War, just how entrenched in American political culture that these barbecues were. And they became very standardized very quickly. By the 1820s, you read these newspaper accounts, they're almost like a boilerplate or a template. Everyone was almost the same. It just became this sort of ceremony. People would gather from all around a county, so hundreds if not thousands of people. They would line up into a long procession with the local militia, and they would march to the county courthouse or maybe a church that's somewhere central. They'd have the local band be playing patriotic songs, and they have a big speech or oration by a prominent citizen about patriotism and celebrating 4th of July.
Yeah.
And then when all that sort of stuff was over, they'd march off to the shady grove where the barbecue was waiting and start eating. And so it was that it was a real time to bring the entire community together for celebrations, to sort of talk about the principles of the revolution and independence and liberty and all that kind of thing. and build community and build sense of patriotism in the early United States.
It was like a political gathering, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I think you mentioned that there were political speeches or toasts made, political toasts.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was not these early events were not tame. There was lots of booze floating around, a lot of whiskey and a lot of brandy and those types of things. But yeah, it was the standard thing to do at the end of after everybody finished eating was to do rounds of toasts, and there always would be 13 what they call regular toasts representing the 13 American colonies and stripes in the flag, and which would be people would be selected to do those, and then those would be followed by what they call volunteer toasts, where anybody from the crowd could stand up and toast, you know, George Washington or Liberty or whatever they wanted to toast, and the newspapers would actually print the toasts, and sometimes there's dozens of the volunteer toasts, so you can only imagine it. People were pretty well toasted by the end of all that. So it was sort of a civics kind of thing, you know, toasting liberty, sometimes political statements made in the toast. And before long, the politicians started showing up to these because they realized that, you know, long before TV, radio, anything like that, the best way to get in front of a huge crowd of people and give a speech was to go to one of these 4th of July barbecues. So that's actually where the stump speech came from. The term stump speech literally refers to jumping up on a stump that had been cleared in one of these groves, because the barbecue is actually always held in a shady grove because it was 4th of July in the South with no air conditioning. And it would cut down trees, and you have stumps around that you could jump up on and make a speech. So that was sort of very early on became just, you know, part of the political culture of the United States.
Of course, you know, we always associate the 4th of July now with just a family picnic, but the 4th of July, go through the 20s and the 30s, 1820s, 30s, up to the Civil War, and then post-Civil War, and then all of a sudden, the 4th of July barbecue becomes almost a political football, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and what happened is, right, you know, of course, when the South seceded and tried to leave the Union, the 4th of July ceased to be a holiday that was celebrated by white Southerners. In the book, I actually found this great account in Washington, Georgia, where right after the war ended, right after Appomattox, you know, 4th of July was a couple months later, and so there were federal troops stationed in Washington, Georgia, and you know, so the occupying federal troops. So the troops staged a 4th of July barbecue. But the only people who came to it were all the African American, newly freed African American citizens from the county, where all the white citizens stayed away, and they actually tried to hold their own sort of counter protest 5th of July barbecue the day after, though that was so hot it wasn't very effective. But that was sort of what happened in the South in the decades following the Civil War: is white Southerners did not celebrate the 4th of July. But African-American Southerners did, and it became very much one of the central sort of celebrations in the African-American community. You mentioned Juneteenth, which is, you know, just got passed into a national holiday, and I think people have probably been reading about it, you know, and will know that that was the day that General Granger arrived in Texas, and with the arrival of federal troops, they could finally put into effect the Emancipation Proclamation. So it represents the days the last Americans were freed from slavery. But in other parts of the South, basically the Emancipation Proclamation took effect on January 1st, 1863. So in parts of the South that are occupied by federal troops, it went in place then. Other parts of the South, it went into effect whenever federal troops arrived. So here in Charleston, it was in, I believe, February 1865 is when the federal troops seized Charleston and were able to put it into place. So all throughout the South in the post-war era, there are two big celebrations in the African-American community. One was Emancipation Day, and that was usually actually on January 1st in a lot of states, and in April in, I think, Tennessee and Kentucky, just related to when, you know, sort of when emancipation was put into place. And a barbecue was always the centerpiece of Emancipation Day. So straight through the, you know, the rest of the 19th century, Emancipation Day and the 4th of July were the two big, or two of the biggest community events in the African American community, and a barbecue was always, you know, front and center for that. Whereas 4th of July was not even commemorated by white Southerners at least until for really 40 more years, up until the during the Spanish-American War, when there was a U.S. went to war against Spain, there was a big revival of patriotic sentiment, and then everyone started celebrating 4th of July again. So there's this sort of this period for 40 years where only half of the South really celebrated 4th of July.
Before we take the break, I'm going to read it right here. The popularity of Juneteenth ebbed in the early 20th century as black Texans began to leave farms and move into the cities. July 4th was already established as a civic holiday, and non-agricultural employers were less inclined than their rural counterparts to let employees take another day off on June 19th. The civil rights movement of the 60s sparked a revitalization of Juneteenth as many activists began to look back to the civic traditions of African American past. In 1980, the Texas legislature made June 19th an official state holiday, and it has since spread well beyond the borders of the Lone Star State. So we're we're kind of late to the party here, aren't we?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I thought Juneteenth was something that was seriously was just brought up in the last 2 or 3 years, which just shows my tremendous ignorance of history. This thing's been around.
In Texas, it was called Emancipation Day till almost the turn of the 20th century, till 1900, and then because it was on June 19th, which is the day that emancipation arrived in Texas, that sort of merged into this Juneteenth day. So it's been around for since 1865. So a very old holiday indeed.
And people listen. We're gonna take our next break here in just a second. But people listen. Don't think this isn't a political discussion. This is a discussion that what runs common through all these different celebrations, Jeff, is barbecue. Let's have a barbecue.
Whether it be pulling family together or political things, barbecue surrounds everything.
Yeah. That's what's so amazing about what we do. It just transcends every race, every holiday. Everybody's got a favorite time of year or day to do a barbecue. Hey, stay with us. We're talking with Dr. Robert Moss, author of Barbecue, The History of an American Institution, and we will be right back. 267-1023, 267-1023. If you have a comment or you want to talk to Robert or ask him a historical question about a barbecue, now's your chance. 267-1023 here on the Owl's Nest Barbecue Show live on Talk Radio 102.3.
Robert's a true definition of we got questions, we got answers.
Yeah.
Barbecue makes the world go round.
You still there, Robert?
Yep, I sure am.
Okay, good deal.
When I'm live.
Yeah, no.
We're off for telling the music.
We're off radio. We're still live on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
That was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it's a fascinating period. I mean, just that it's really true that just about every major civic event, celebration in the South in the 19th century involved barbecue at the center of it, whether it was 4th of July or
to this day
elections or anything.
To this day, when people run in the local races, they will always come to me and say, hey, we're thinking about doing a barbecue fundraiser, would you be interested in doing the barbecue? And and normally those things, they make a ton of money for candidates, because somebody will donate the meat. And they put out the little bowl for the checks, and the beer starts flowing and the barbecue starts flowing, and the checks get written and the checks get bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's funny, speaking of writing checks, back when they were building the railroads in the South, that was the biggest way to raise funds. They were selling subscriptions, which is basically shares in the railroad companies. And so you'd hold a big barbecue, get all the whiskey and beer flowing, and then after everybody was eating and drunk their fill, then you open up the books and suddenly everybody starts subscribing, thinks it's a real good idea and invest in the railroad.
That is so funny. We come back. We'll if you know of any specific events around the Spanish-American War, something that maybe took notice or made people take notice. And
yeah, I really don't.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think.
Let's see, when Spanish...
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, when was that, 1890?
1898, I want to say, 1899.
Isn't that the war where Roosevelt charged the hill? Isn't that the Rough Riders?
Yep. So, yeah. Yep. And so, like, Puerto Rico and the Philippines were sort of where it played out, and that's how the U.S., you know, sort of got Puerto Rico as a territory, and for a while, the Philippines was the territory.
Well, we know.
But San Juan Hill.
We know Theodore Roosevelt was a big barbecue guy.
Yep, for sure. And his successor, who was his vice president, William Howard Taft, was a huge barbecue guy as well. And he was actually the governor of the Philippines before he became president. And
I didn't know that.
I haven't written it up yet, but there's some great barbecue events that he went to in Georgia right after he got elected president. Before he took office, he sort of...
For those who think...
All right, we'll get a preview, and we'll talk about that.
FM.
Talk Radio
102.3. Hey, we're back on the Owl's Nest Barbecue Show live here on Talk Radio 102.3. We're talking with author Robert Moss, Barbecue, The History of an American Institution, among the many books he has scripted. He's the king and he reigns supreme at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply. Myron Mix and Rubs and Sauces set the pace for your backyard cookout. Myron is the winningest man in barbecue and also the current world champion from Memphis in May. And he wants to be part of your backyard team too. So team up with Jack's Old South and get your Myron Mixing products at the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply in Ooltewah. Our number is 267-1023. If you want to get on the line and ask Dr. Robert Moss, the historian of barbecue, a question like a what if or have you ever heard of? And at the break, we were talking about fast-forwarding to the Spanish-American War when, I guess, Robert, that's when the South got over themselves and started celebrating the 4th of July again.
Yeah, two things had happened. One was there was this sort of period of reconciliation, and actually in the book there's this giant barbecue. I think it was in 1895. It was there's an organization called the Grand Army of the Republic, which the GAR, which was the Union sort of Veterans Association, and they staged this giant barbecue in Kentucky and invited all the Confederate soldier veteran organizations to come there. And it was actually Gus Joubert, who was the barbecue and burgoo king of Kentucky, cooked. And there were almost 100,000 people in attendance.
Whoa.
It may be the largest barbecue ever in the U.S. But it was the theme was reconciliation between the Union and the Confederate troops. And, of course, by that point, it was 40 years after the end of the war. So most of the veterans were old men at that point. And so there was a lot of other things going on. But there's sort of a theme of reconciliation in the air. And then when the Spanish-American War came, which I believe 1898, a few years later, I think at that point you had a surge of sort of patriotic fervor in the South because, you know, the U.S. was at war. And that sort of led to everybody starting to wave the stars and stripes again and going to 4th of July, you know, celebrating 4th of July barbecues.
Hey, Robert, hold on. We got a caller on line one. We got Juan on line one. Go ahead, Juan.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm thoroughly enjoying the discussion and the historical facts. Two things. First, Steve, should we be calling you, I don't know, coach or maestro or, I mean, is doctor, professor, is there a title that you must adhere to for this show?
Oh, yes. Yes, it is. I am a smokeologist.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. I'm a smokeologist.
Don't encourage him. Don't encourage him. He doesn't need it.
Go on, my friend.
to your esteemed guest, in all seriousness, what types of meat were most prevalently used during, you know, these historical events? I mean, we all know, you know, kind of in the South, it was always pig and Texas. I mean, at least nowadays, you know, it's beef. But I mean, did they use sheep or goat or beef, pork? I mean, what were the more prevalent cuts and ways of preparing this?
Yeah. Well, the answer to all that is yes. And that's the really interesting thing about 19th century barbecue is that, yeah, we think of, you know, pork as Carolinas today and beef as Texas. But in the 19th century, it was everything went on the barbecue pit. And these, you know, up until the early 20th century, there weren't restaurants. People weren't really cooking barbecue to sell it. These were free community events that were staged by the community. So the farmers would donate just whatever they had on hand. And these were huge events, you know, so you're cooking for thousands of people. The list of animals that were served and the number and the pounds is actually just amazing from this period. So you would see, no matter whether you're in Texas, you know, Tennessee, the Carolinas, Virginia, you would see barbecues with pigs, goats, sheep, oftentimes a whole, you know, whole steer split in half, chickens, a lot of game. You see venison put in the pit. So, but sheep or mutton and lamb were actually really common barbecue meats throughout the 19th century and well into the 20th century. It started to fade out right after World War II. But the short answer is just about anything on four legs or with wings would end up on the pit.
Well, it's interesting. I was having a discussion with a gentleman at work the other day about iguanas and how they're moving into Florida. I don't know if they're in mm-hmm. the country there yet, but they're a non-native and invasive species. I hear they're quite tasty. Steve, do you have any good recipes for iguana?
No, but I know who does, and this is no joke. There is a barbecue person. Her name is Robin Lindars, Lindars. Robert, you may know her, Robin. It's grill. What is it? Grill. It's grill. The Grill Girl is what she goes by, and she's got a website, grillgirl.com, and she has published iguana recipes. She lives in Florida and she hunts these rascals. And this is the truth. She eats them. And you're right, Juan. They are tasty, according to her. I have not seen one yet.
I'm in Puerto Rico, and it was darn good.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. It was like served with a mango chutney. It was smoked meat. I mean, it was delicious.
I will take your word for that.
You gator, and that was pretty good. So I figure if gator is pretty good, then iguana is probably in the same ballpark.
But
this gentleman I met, he has a place in Costa Rica, and he says the natives there call it the pollo de arbor, which is the chicken of the trees.
Yep.
And they apparently it's some pretty good meat. Maybe we'll get some of those rascals around Tennessee, and we can get a hunting permit.
Well, we've got alligators. I mean, we've got alligators up here now, so why not iguanas?
Yeah.
It's a party here in Tennessee. See what no income tax gets you, folks? You get alligators, iguana. It's great. Okay. Juan, thank you so much. Good question there, Robert. And I tell you what, let's take a real quick break. When we come back, more talk. I want to talk about President Taft and his barbecue tour of Georgia before he was president. Okay?
Will do, and there's a possum in the story.
That makes it even better. Iguanas and possums. Folks, you don't hear this stuff on Sport Talk. No sirree, Bob. You don't hear this in the morning when one of the morning hosts said that chicken wings were white meat. I mean, that's what you got to put up with in the morning, on the morning show here on WGOW. See, on WGOW, you got to come for the truth. You got to come Friday nights at 7 to the Allison's Barbecue Show. We'll be right back. Stay with us. That was a great question by that fellow.
Yeah, it was really good.
The first one or the second one?
All of them. The guy knew his barbecue. He knew his geography, too. People that know geography always amaze me.
My favorite one, barbecue, is the one in Oklahoma City in the 1920s, where when Jack Walton got inaugurated as governor, he had a, not as quite as big as that Grand Army of the Republic, but he had a huge barbecue in, you know, at the fairgrounds in Oklahoma City. And I'm trying to find the list. The list of animals that went on the pit is quite amazing. All kinds of stuff from, like, you know, bears and possums and raccoons. And somebody shot some reindeer way up north and shipped them in. And so they actually barbecued reindeer at the Oklahoma barbecue. quite amazing.
I wonder if it's on page 205 and 206. Robert, you wrote this book, and I just cannot. I skip through it and read interesting things that are in it. I tell you, folks, listening here on Facebook, if you don't have this book, if you're interested in all about barbecue, and if you don't have this book, you're really missing out. Let's see.
Yeah, I found it's on 202. The list is.
Yeah.
I didn't even include the thousands of cows, you know, pigs, sheep, and chicken, but there's 103 turkeys, 1,363 rabbits, 26 squirrels, 134 opossums, 113 geese, 5 deer, 2 buffalo, and 2 reindeer shipped in from the north.
That's a bunch of food.
Yeah.
Especially in Oklahoma. I'd say back then there weren't a lot of people in Oklahoma.
Some guy caught a bear and was going to donate. It was live. He was going to donate it to the cause, but all the school children in Oklahoma City sort of felt sorry for the bear, so they pulled all their lunch money and bought the bear from the guy and donated him to the local zoo. And so he was like a favorite.
Oh, that's cool.
Sort of, you know, creature at the zoo. So at least one of the animals didn't go on the pit there.
See, these stories are interesting. This is interesting radio. This is very interesting radio. It's a lot better than Howard Stern. Ha! Robert, maybe we'll get picked up by Sirius Radio or something. Like that.
Hey, you know, I'm just waiting for their call. I'm sure it's coming anytime.
You could use me as a partner, couldn't you? I got the equipment.
Oh, absolutely.
See how quick I did ditched right there?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I got thrown at the curb so fast.
Write a book. I'll bring you along.
If I could write.
Just write a book. That's all you got to do. I'll talk to you if you write a book. You know, Robert, you got to put this book out on audio. You ever thought about that?
Actually, there is. The original version
Hot
is on audiobook.
Your afternoon drive destination. Sport Talk. Talk 102.3. Talk Radio 102.3.
All right. Welcome back, all you pellet heads out there. You know your pellet smoker needs a quality fuel. At the Owl's Nest Barbecue Supply, we stock Barbecuers Delight pellets that will keep your smoker running smoothly with great flavor. Everything from mesquite, oak, hickory, cherry. You can trust Barbecuers Delight pellets to stoke your smoker with flavor and dependability. Our guest today, Dr. Robert Moss, author of Barbecue, The History of American Institution. Okay, William Howard Taft, Teddy Roosevelt's vice president, I guess, and when Roosevelt decided not to run, I guess, Governor Taft, would that be his correct?
He was originally Judge Taft, is what they call him. He was a federal judge, and then but before that, he was the governor of the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
When the U.S. occupied the Philippines after the Spanish-American War, and then he became Teddy Roosevelt's vice president. And then when Roosevelt decided not to run again, he was sort of Roosevelt's handpicked successor and was elected president in 1908 and took office in 1909.
And he did a barbecue tour of Georgia. Now tell us about that.
I think back in those days, the president was still inaugurated in March. So after mm-hmm. he got elected, he and his family went and spent the summer in Augusta, Georgia, and stayed down there at sort of a golf resort, one of the early golf resort kind of things. And while he was there, everybody, all the little towns in Georgia invited him to come to a barbecue, and he only accepted a couple of them. He accepted one in Augusta at sort of a local politico's farm outside of Augusta, and he accepted another one with the Beach Island Farmers Club, which is right across the river in South Carolina. But the most interesting thing is that he had heard about possum, and a barbecue possum dinner was staged because he had asked about it in Atlanta. And so all across Georgia, this call went out for hunters to provide possum for the feast. And so they basically made this giant feast with, you know, hundreds of sort of prominent Georgians invited to it for the big possum supper, where he's when he roasted possum and sweet potatoes was the meal.
Mm.
And by all accounts, it was a big hit. And they procured all these big possums.
You know, we laugh at possums now. Eating possum is a funny thing now, but back then it was also a favorite on the Christmas menu at the White House.
Yes,
many times
considered a delicacy for sure.
Yeah, and they wrote, they used to raise them. They raised some of them on these special farms. I think I'm channeling Adrian Miller now. One of my other favorite barbecue authors. And I think he said they raised him as a special kind of animal, a special possum. It wasn't the road slick.
Would,
it wasn't the road slick possum we're thinking
then
of.
And they would, feed them, sort of put them in pens and fatten them up on, clean feed so they would be fat and tasty instead of
they were the
like whatever they
were. A9 version of possum.
Yeah, the A9 brisket version. Robert, we're gonna have to get out of here. Thank you so much for being on the show again. You are always a pleasure to talk with, and always interesting. You kind of class up the joint, and as they say. And I look forward to seeing you. And of course, we'll talk to you again before November the 13th. But if you're in the Charleston area, make sure or you make plans for November the 13th. And what is the name of the
It's called Holy Smokes.
Holy Smokes
Barbecue Festival.
And that will be November the 13th in North Charleston, South Carolina. And I will be there. Now, Robert, put me on standby, okay? If one of those,
if
Rodney Scott bails on you,
go to the bullpen.
I got no problem. Mind, I got no problem going to the pen, being Rodney Scott's reliever, okay? And don't worry, I can do just as good a job as Rodney Scott. I promise.
He'll come out of the pen like Goose Gossage, nothing but heat.
That's right. Robert, thank you so much. We're going to let you go. And everybody listening here in Chattanooga, we've got to get back to the pit because we've got a 140-pound pig there that needs to be tended to. And we want to make sure the temperature is just right. Come see us tomorrow at noon at Cambridge Square at Ryan Hargrove's place, Hoptown Beer Bar. And we'll see you there tomorrow. Joe, thank you so much. Everyone in Chattanooga, good night and good luck.